tell you a story about the house when blue.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is February 28, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is A One Platelet, A One Plasma, and One RBC, The Proper Trial. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Salim Razai. Salim is a member of the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio, Texas. He is currently the creator and founder of the Rebel EM blog and Rebelcast, which is available on iTunes. Welcome back to the SGEM, Salim.
Thanks for having me back, Ken. Always great to be able to spread the foamy goodness with you and the listeners at the SGEM.
How'd I make out on a Texan accent?
Sounded pretty solid. Needs a little bit of work. I think your Canadian accent's a little bit better.
I think it comes more naturally. Now, hey, you were just hanging out with Rob Rogers and the Swami in Florida, weren't you?
Yeah, the three of us have started our traveling teaching course where we try to improve how we teach in medicine. It's not just open to physicians, but open to nurses, paramedics, and anyone else in the medical field. Our motto is better educators equals better patient care. For anyone interested, they can check out the website at www.flippingmeded.com.
And what's your next adventure?
Well, we're getting ready to head out to Sweden. Rob Rogers, Michael Bond, and George Willis, and myself are all invading Stockholm, Sweden for the SWEETS 2015 conference on March 17th through 19th.
Wow, that sounds awesome. How about we get this proper podcast started with a case scenario?
Sounds great. So our case today is a 28-year-old male who's involved in an altercation and shot multiple times in the chest. He presents to your emergency department. His initial vital signs include a blood pressure of 72 over 46, a heart rate of 140, respiratory rate of 30, and an oxygen saturation of 89% on a non-rebreather, and he has a normal temperature at 98.7 degrees Fahrenheit. You intubate the patient successfully, begin intravenous fluids, and place bilateral chest tubes with a significant amount of blood return from the right chest tube. Due to the patient's blood loss, you initiate damage control resuscitation, including permissive hypotension, source control of the bleeding, and a massive transfusion protocol.
Well, let's give the audience a little background information on trauma in the United States.
Absolutely. In the United States, trauma is the leading cause of death among patients between the ages of 1 and 44 years of age, and the third leading cause of death overall. Approximately 20 to 40% of trauma deaths occur after hospital admission and are a result of massive hemorrhage.
Hey, did you know that there have been no large, multi-center, randomized clinical trials with survival as a primary endpoint that support optimal trauma resuscitation practices with approved blood products, and therefore, there are many conflicting recommendations?
Yeah, and there was the prospective observational multi-center major trauma transfusion, that's a mouthful, or the PROMPT trial, which demonstrated that many physicians are using transfusion of blood products in a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio or a 1-to-1-to-2 ratio of plasma, platelets, and red blood cells, respectively, and that early transfusion of plasma and platelets was associated with an improved 6-hour survival after admission.
So what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer today?
Yeah, so our clinical question is, what is the effectiveness and safety of transfusing adult patients with severe trauma and major bleeding using plasma, platelets, and red blood cells in a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio versus a 1-to-1-to-2 ratio?
And what's the reference, Salim?
Is Holcomb, JB et al. Title of the paper is Transfusion of Plasma, Platelets, and Red Blood Cells in a 1-to-1-to-1 versus a 1-to-1-to-2 ratio, and Mortality in Patients with Severe Trauma, the Proper Randomized Clinical Trial, which was just published in JAMA February of 2015.
We are cutting that KT window down to less than 1 month. And I just want to tell people, PROPPR, the P-R-O-P-P-R, stood for the Pragmatic Randomized Optimal Platelet and Plasma Ratio Trial. All right, let's go through the PICO. What was the population?
So this was 680 patients age greater than or equal to 15 years of age and or greater than or equal to 50 kilograms, meeting the highest level of trauma activation.
And who did they include in the trial?
So they were very specific in their inclusion. They required at least one unit of any blood component within the first hour of arrival to the emergency department or during pre-hospital transport and or predicted by the ABC score of greater than or equal to 2, which I will just go over in just a second, or clinical gestalt to need massive transfusion of greater than or equal to 10 units of red blood cells within 24 hours.
Okay, give me the ABCs.
So the ABC score for massive transfusion determines need for massive transfusion in trauma patients, and it basically asks four questions. Is there a penetrating mechanism? Is the ED systolic blood pressure less than or equal to 90 millimeters of mercury? Is the ED heart rate greater than or equal to 120? And is there a positive ultrasound fast exam?
And there are multiple exclusions in this trial. And what I'll do is, rather than running through them on the podcast, I'll throw them up on the blog so you can review them. How about the intervention?
Right. So the intervention was platelet, plasma, and red blood cell transfusion in a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio.
And how about the comparison?
Was a plasma to platelet and red blood cell transfusion in a 1-to-1-to-2 ratio.
And what was their primary outcome?
Their primary outcome was all-cause mortality at 24 hours and 30 days.
And they had a few secondary outcomes, which were time to hemostasis, blood product volumes transfused, and complications. But here are the author's conclusions. Quote, among patients with severe trauma and major bleeding, early administration of plasma, platelets, and red blood cells in a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio compared with a 1-to-1-to-2 ratio did not result in significant differences in mortality at 24 hours or at 30 days. However, more patients in the 1-to-1-to-1 group achieved hemostasis and fewer experienced death due to exsanguination by 24 hours. Even though there was an increased use of plasma and platelets transfused in the 1-to-1-to-1 group, no other safety differences were identified between the two groups. End of quote. Well, Salim, you've been on the show before. You know that we go through a quality checklist to probe the literature. And so for randomized clinical control trials, we have 11 questions. So question number one, was the study population included focused on ED patients?
Yes, but specifically, it was one of 12 emergency departments that were designated level one trauma centers in North America.
And did they adequately randomize their patients?
They did.
Now, did they conceal the randomization?
So it's really unsure if they did this. The initial container of blood products was prepared by the site's blood bank and sealed to blind the physicians to treatment assignment. But once transfusion protocol was started, the physicians were completely unblinded.
Okay, question number four. Were the patients analyzed in the groups with which they were assigned?
They were.
And question number five, the study patients, were they recruited consecutively?
Yes.
So there was no selection bias. Number six, the patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
They were. The majority of the patients were male with similar ages in both groups, and no differences were detected between treatment groups and baseline characteristics.
How about the participants? Were they unaware of what group they were allocated to?
Yes, they were blinded.
Question eight, were all groups treated equally except for that intervention?
So this is unclear as well. The pragmatic part of the trial left the management after randomization up to the treating clinician.
Okay. Question number nine, did they get complete follow-up, at least 80% for both groups?
Yeah, so that was pretty impressive with this study. Follow-up was excellent with both groups. It was 100% in the 24-hour follow-up and 99.4% in the 30-day follow-up group.
All right. Were all patient-important outcomes considered?
Yes. What's more important than mortality at 24 hours and 30 days?
I guess that's a pretty important patient-oriented outcome. All right. The final question, number 11. The treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
So the answer to that's no. Although this is the largest randomized clinical trial to date looking at mortality and massive transfusion protocols, the study population was not large enough to detect a difference in mortality of less than 10%.
All right, well, let's go through the key results then.
So there was no statistically significant difference in mortality at 24 hours or at 30 days.
Yeah, so the 24-hour, the mortality rate was 12.7% in the 1-to-1-to-1 group versus 17% in the 1-to-1-to-2 group. And when they looked at 30 days, the mortality rate was 22.4% in the 1-to-1-to-1 group and 26.1% in the 1-to-1-to-2 group.
Yeah, and exsanguination in the first 24 hours was significantly decreased in the 1-to-1-to-1 group at 9.2% versus the 1-to-1-to-2 group at 14.6% with a p-value of 0.03.
More patients achieved hemostasis in the 1-to-1-to-1 group versus the 1-to-1-to-2 group, and the difference was 86% versus 78%.
And more plasma, and let's be specific here, a median of 7 units versus 5 units and platelets, median of 12 units versus 6 units, were used in the 1-to-1-to-1 ratio versus the 1-to-1-to-2 ratio, respectively.
and there were no differences in complications between the two transfusion strategies. So that ends the results section. Let's look at the commentary now.
Sure. So it's great to have a large randomized control trial looking at such an important topic. These studies take a tremendous amount of effort to coordinate and to do well. So congratulations to Dr. Holcomb and his team at the University of Texas.
And this trial was designed to test if a 1-to-1-to-1 protocol was superior to a 1-to-1-to-2 protocol and safety. They powered the study at about 600 patients to detect a 10% difference. And their primary outcome of all-cause mortality at 24 hours and 30 days was not statistically significant.
And this does not mean that there's no difference between the two protocols. The only conclusion that can be made here is that there was not a greater than 10% difference.
And I think this is an important concept of trial design in evidence-based medicine. A 10% mortality difference would be huge if it was powered appropriately. And they demonstrated in this study only a 4% difference at 24 hours and 30 days, favoring the 1-to-1-to-1 group. They would have needed a much larger trial, an N of about 3,000, to confirm if this 4% difference was actually true. And that would give you a number needed to treat of only 25.
And there was a problem of unblinding of the trial once the transfusion protocol was started, as we stated earlier. This had the potential for interfering with the treatment of the patients once they were assigned to each of the protocols.
Another concern about the proper trial is why compare 1-to-1-to-1 to 1-to-1-to-2. The hypothesis was generated from the PROMPT study, but this was a prospective observational trial showing an associated benefit of earlier and higher ratios of plasma and platelets. There could have been other confounding factors responsible for this observed mortality benefit.
And others may argue that they should have compared 1-to-1-to-1 to a goal-directed approach, or usual care, quote-unquote, to find out if this protocol was superior. They addressed this briefly in their discussion, but this trial cannot speak to usual care or a goal-directed approach.
Now, Salim, we've seen in sepsis care over the last decade go through a transition. It started with usual care not being that great, and then Dr. Rivers' paper came along and demonstrated a protocol with a bundle of steps could be significantly better in treating septic patients. However, last year, major trials like the PROCESS trial and ARISE showed us two things. One, that usual septic care is now much better and that all parts of the bundle may not be necessary. A similar story could emerge as more information becomes available on what is the best approach to patients requiring massive transfusions.
Yeah, and another issue is the two different transfusion protocols can be deceiving if not read in detail. They say that the study compared a 1-to-1-to-1 protocol to a 1-to-1-to-2 protocol. However, there were some important differences, not just in the ratios, but in the order patients received the blood products.
Yes, I think that's important. When you looked at the initial containers, the 1-to-1-to-1 group got platelets first, 6 units, followed by alternating RBCs and plasma. But if you were assigned into the 1-to-1-to-2 group, you got 2 units of RBCs first and 1 unit of plasma, and platelets were not transfused until after 9 units of other blood products.
I think this is a key piece of information and could explain why the 1-to-1-to-1 group achieved homeostasis and fewer exsanguinations. It is possible that platelets given first in the 1-to-1-to-1 treatment group was responsible for the earlier hemostasis and fewer deaths due to exsanguination by 24 hours.
Yeah, and if you look at the Kaplan-Meier curves, the lines deviate between 1 and 3 hours, but otherwise remain parallel. Could it have been that the early transfusion of platelets in the 1-to-1-to-1 protocol explains this abnormality or this anomaly in the results?
And a minor point is they use the definition of quote-unquote massive transfusion as those patients requiring greater than or equal to 10 units of RBCs in the first 24 hours. The median transfusions of RBCs in the study were only 9 units. There are other definitions for massive transfusions, but at least half their patients in this study did not reach the definition they decided to use.
Another comment about this study is that it was a, quote, pragmatic trial, and this has both strengths and weaknesses. After the randomization process, they left the treatment decisions up to the attending physicians. This would be more real-world practice, but it makes it more difficult to interpret the results. A more rigorous but less pragmatic approach would have been to treat both groups equally, except for the intervention.
Their study objective was to compare the effectiveness of a 1-to-1-to-1 transfusion ratio of plasma, platelets, and RBCs to a 1-to-1-to-2 ratio. They did appear to achieve these ratios with plasma to RBCs. However, the median ratios of platelets to RBCs were 1.5 for the 1:1:1 group and 0.4 for the 1:1:2 group. So patients receiving more platelets than they were supposed to in the 1:1:1 group and less platelets than they were supposed to in the 1:1:2 group.
And an online supplemental E-table number 2 showed the total blood products up to 24 hours after admission. The 1:1:1 group got a mean of 7 units of plasma, 12 units of platelets, and 9 units of RBCs. In comparison, the 1:1:2 group received a mean unit of 5 units of plasma, 6 units of platelets, and 9 units of RBCs.
They explained this in their discussion, suggesting that after the intervention stage of the study, there was catching up of products based on laboratory-directed care. This resulted in the 1:1:2 group receiving more plasma and platelet products and a final ratio approaching 1:1:1.
The other objectives of the PROPER study was to determine if the safety of the transfusion strategies, and it's important to note that they found no differences in the 23 pre-specified complications. But Salim, what do you think of our conclusions and our evaluation compared to what the authors came up with?
So I think we agree that a plasma to platelet to red blood cell massive transfusion protocol in a 1:1:1 versus 1:1:2 does not result in a greater than 10% difference in mortality at 24 hours or 30 days, but smaller differences in mortality may be possible.
So here's the bottom line then. A 1:1:1 strategy is a reasonable approach to adult patients who require a massive transfusion and seem to achieve more hemostasis and less death from exsanguination at 24 hours without increased complications. How about resolving the case, though, that you presented?
Yeah, so unfortunately, our patient did not survive. He was started on a massive transfusion protocol of 1:1:1 and had an ED thoracotomy performed, but ultimately, all the bleeding could not be stopped, and the patient coded and died.
So from a clinical application, for adult patients who require a massive transfusion, a 1:1:1 is not superior to a 1:1:2 strategy. The proper data suggests giving platelets earlier and in higher ratios. Local protocols will need to be developed using available resources and expertise to guide the care of these critically ill patients. But what are you going to tell patients?
Yeah, so something along the lines of your family member has been shot in our particular case. They're critically injured. There's a lot of bleeding, and they will require a massive transfusion of blood products. The U.S. Department of Defense has come up with a treatment called damage control resuscitation. It involves early transfusion of different types of blood products, including platelets that help stop bleeding, red blood cells that have oxygen-carrying capacity to organs in the body, and plasma that helps fill up their vascular space. We're going to use this balanced approach to try and save their life.
Now, there have been a number of foamy reviews on the PROPER trial already in the month of February. I'll put up a list of those in the show notes, including the great review that you did, Salim, Rebel EM.
I appreciate that, Ken. So Rory Spiegel at EM Nerd, The Adventure of the Blanche Soldier.
And then Ryan Radecki from EM Literature of Note did The Fixed Ratio Massive Transfusion Answer.
Richard Carden at St. Emlyn's, Journal Club, Getting the Balance Right, The PROPER Trial.
The bottom line, PROPER, transfusions of plasma, platelets, and red blood cells in a 1:1:1 versus a 1:1:2 ratio and mortality in patients with severe trauma.
And finally, Scott Weingart at MCRIT, Podcast 144, The PROPER Trial with John Holcomb, the lead author.
And that sound reminds me that it's time for the Keener Contest. Last week's winner was someone with the email name Heckglen, H-E-C-G-L-E-N. They knew that the posterior canal is the most commonly affected semicircular canal in benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. Salim, what's the Keener contest this week?
Yeah, so we got a doozy this week. So platelets were first drawn by George Gulliver in 1841, who observed them using the twin lens or compound microscope. However, they were not called platelets at first. Multiple other people described platelets over the years, but called them by various names. So the Keener question this week is, who is credited with coining the term platelets in his 1910 publication?
Good question. But giving you your case presentation, maybe we should have called it the Gunner question today. All right, so If you know the answer, send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first person to provide the correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. I just want to announce some conferences that are coming up. March 16th to 20th, Emergency Medicine and Acute Care Course in Vail, Colorado. April 9th to 11th, the Society of Rural Physicians of Canada, Montreal, Quebec. April 20th to 21st, Steel Beam in Hamilton, Ontario. May 30th to June 3rd, the Canadian Association of Emergency Medicine has their annual conference, and that's in Edmonton, Alberta. And then June 23rd to June 26th, the SMAC conference in Chicago, Illinois. Salim, thank you again for being a guest skeptic and reviewing the PROPER trial.
Ken, thank you for having me on. As always, it's a pleasure.
Now, I don't want to end this with a downer, but it's February 28th, and we found out yesterday that Leonard Nimoy passed away.
Yeah, that's really unexpected and sad.
It is kind of sad because, you know what, my first exposure to a scientist, to a critical thinker, to someone who was always skeptical was Mr. Spock on Star Trek. I'm going to finish with just saying to everyone out there, live long and prosper. But Salim, will you give the SGEM tagline and I'll ask you to do it in a Texan accent.
No problem. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.